And now, the Creepy Cricket presents The Edgar Allan Show with your host, Edgar Allan.
Greetings, friends. This is a story about sharing. A man named Edgar one night decides to have a friend for dinner. It will be a meal that neither will ever forget. Each dish has been prepared with meticulous care, each morsel peppered with love and seasoned with utter loathing. Each bite a fateful step, bringing his guest one step closer to the end of the meal. And for dessert, a deep, empty, endless slumber, as cold as the winter wind and as black as the moonless night. There's no turning back. Oh yes, children, tonight this man is going to teach us about murder.
And sharing, mostly about sharing. And now, boys and girls, turn down the lights, open a window, and hold your breath. It's time for Stinky Stories.
You may think me mad. And perhaps I am mad, unpossessed of the reason that once kept me moored to sense, sobriety, and civility. Shall I tell you why? It began with a sickness, an ailment which had drastically heightened my senses, my hearing in especial. And that's what led to it, the act of which I am most regrettably guilty, murder. We lived in a great old house, the old man and I. I loved him. Oh yes, I loved him. Platonically. I had a deep admiration and respect for the old fellow. He had been a most agreeable companion, and possessed a quiet sagacity, which I found refreshing. And so I offered to let him room in the spacious house which I now owned. But as a boarder, I began to notice traits and idiosyncrasies in him I had not previously seen. He seemed, for example, to remember what he wished to say only after shoveling a quantity of food into his mouth. He would then speak, launching various morsels of his meal into my face, my lap, my coffee. He likewise had the habit of preparing luxuriant meals for himself and then abandoning the sullied cooking equipment to my care. All the same, it was not these things that slowly soured my affection toward him. It was the growing realization that he was an idiot. The breaking point came one October morning. We had gathered at the breakfasting table, as was our custom, and I attempted to engage him in conversation.
Salutations, Major.
Oh, morning, young fella.
You turned in rather late last evening.
And how was your repose?
My what? Your repose.
I don't follow.
Your respite. The fruitage of your somnolence.
What was that?
Your dormancy. Your sleep? How was your sleep?
Oh, sorry. Didn't know what you was asking me there.
Oh, not to worry, not to worry. It's just that I noted with some interest yesterday eve that you had burned your lamp's oil until nearly 12:30, and might I inquire as to the occupation to which you had so fastidiously devoted yourself at such a protracted o'clock?
What was that?
The industry to which the time you had bought from slumber had been remunerated.
I'm still not,
Oh, merciful heaven, can we please just have a normal 19th century interchange for once? Doing. What were you doing last night?
Oh, just catching up on my Grey's Anatomy there.
Oh, you didn't use my laboratory again.
Oh, don't worry, I cleaned up after myself. Did cut my finger with the scalpel, though.
I would ask that you be so good as to notify me when next you attempt such an ill-advised venture.
Say, you know, you, talk funny.
I had begun to tire of the old man, but his late inability to comprehend my speech was not the most compelling reason for my burgeoning abhorrence of him. No, it was something else, something so completely unnerving that I could feel it beginning to tug at the very fringes of my sanity.
Pray pass the butter, sir, if you would be so kind.
Pass it? I just ate it. I don't expect to pass it till sometime tomorrow, if I'm lucky.
It was his laugh. could there be any more unnerving sound in the whole of creation? To make matters worse, once he'd gotten himself going, the laughter did not stop. One terrible pun piling on top of another. All too soon, my hatred for that sound overpowered the warm feelings I had once felt for him. Slowly, it ate at me, gnawed at me, until I began to realize that the only way to make the laugh go away was to make him go away, for good. And I knew just how to accomplish it. You cannot possibly believe the time, care, and effort that went into planning the old man's demise. Each day I would greet him merrily and ask him how his evening had passed, and each day I would politely endure the unnerving gaiety of his farcical tittering. But I knew how it would all end, for the old man had a weakness I planned to exploit. A gastrointestinal Achilles heel. His pitfall was his palate. You see, the general was rather fond of beans. He would often speak of how good they were for his heart and credited his long-lived existence to that musical fruit. And so it was that one evening I decided to treat him to a very special meal, consisting of nothing more than these, his most cherished morsel. I knew he would be quite unable to resist, and when I invited him to dine that evening, he fairly gorged himself on them. Course by course, he verily inhaled the proffered dishes, seasoned as they were with the irresistible spice of hospitality. Pinto bean pudding, soybean soda, baked bean bratwurst, chickpea chowder, garbanzo, gazpacho, fava bean focaccia, one dish following another, he ate and ate and ate until, at last, he signaled the end of his gastric excursion in his customary manner. He then excused himself and retired for the evening, but what the old man had not known was that each dish had been lovingly prepared with arsenine. Yes, a poison of my own invention, it was a combination of arsenic and strychnine. And so it was that an hour later I climbed the stairs and found him, as expected, expired upon the floor, dead. Words cannot describe the elation I felt at that moment, the sheer unbridled adulation. The laughter was gone, at last, forever, and now he himself would need to vanish. Within the space of an hour, I had carefully fitted his body into a hollow I had created by removing the floorboards in my study. After a few minutes, I had replaced the planks, and finally the deed was done. I was at last free. But my revelry was cut short when suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping at my chamber door. Visitors? But I wasn't worried. The laughter was gone, and my artifice had been executed with the skill of a craftsman. I alighted the top stair with a carefree, confident step, though in my giddiness I somehow managed to miss it entirely. Ha! But it was a mere inconvenience. Soon I was back on my feet, and in another moment I had gained the front door. Upon opening it, I found three men in police uniforms.
Why, good evening, gentlemen. Morning. You, Edgar? Why, yes, officer. May I help you? Lady next door said she smelled something weird. Do you know anything about it? I was just doing some baking. You know, trying some new dishes. Experimenting. You mind if we look around?
Not at all, gentlemen. Not at all. Please, be as thorough as you like. You'll have to excuse the mess, however. I gave the maid the day off.
You live alone?
Oh, no. I have a roommate.
Yes, sir. Can we talk to him?
Oh, I'm afraid that's not possible. You see, he's dead.
I mean, gone. He's gone at the moment.
Gone where?
Gone too far away for you to talk to him.
Well, when he comes back, you tell him we want to talk to him, all right?
Oh, I was helpful. In fact, so confident was I of my ruse that I at last led them to the very room in which the old man lay hidden, entombed beneath their very feet. And still they suspected nothing. The fools! I had done it. I had successfully carried out my crime and evaded conviction. With sublime confidence, I placed a chair over the spot, the very spot where the old major was buried, and coolly seated myself. In a moment, the constable and his men would be gone, and I would be free. Justice was indeed blind. But just then, there came a sound, a sudden sound, that filled me with terror. I froze. My eyes went immediately to the officers. Had they heard it too? I looked from one to the other, and yet their conversation continued unabated. They had apparently heard nothing. I began to relax once more. But then, it came a second time. This time they must have heard it. Where had it come from? Were the officers to blame? Louder this time, and still no reaction. But now my nerves were on edge. What was this? A faint, fetid aroma now began to fumble my nostrils. The constable had obviously taken note of my discomfort as he opened an inquiry.
You okay, fella?
What? Yes. Do you smell something?
I don't know. Should I?
Why, no, I suppose not. No. You must have heard it that time.
Say, what's eating you, Mac?
And then I remembered. Eating the old man's final meal. The beans. But how could this be? He was dead. Dead. No, it couldn't be. I had silenced the old man's laugh, but this colonic condemnation was far worse, a punitively putrescent vengeance that was unrelenting.
No, I can take no more. It was I killed him. Here, the body is here.
I tore up the floorboards with a mad abandon, in the hopes of silencing the accursed sound of the major's rectal recriminations. Within moments, I had torn the planks from the floor, only to have a new and unexpected horror visited upon me.
Whoa, Nelly, that was quite a meal. Must have eaten too much and gone into a food coma. Hey, what am I doing down here? But how?
The arsenine.
Eh, what's that?
I said arsenine.
Oh yeah, I guess it was pretty arsenine of me to go fall asleep under the floor like that, huh?
Oh, sweet, merciful. No, officer, please, take me away, please.
Say, what get... Hey, wait a minute. Did you try to kill this guy?
Yes, I am culpable, impeachable, incorrigible. You may conduct me to the stockade, sir. Apprehend, condemn, and end me. Oh, please, take me away.
All right, you're under arrest. Take him away, boys. Make sure to read him his rights.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Free at last. Free. Thank you.
He always was a strange fella.
Uh-huh. You all right, mister?
Oh, fine. Tell you one thing, though.
Yeah, what's that?
Well, despite being poisoned, buried alive, folded in half and everything, tonight actually turned out to be a pretty good time.
You don't say.
Oh, yeah. In fact, it was a real gas.
This has been a dramatization of The Telltale Fart by Edgar Allan Poe, starring Vincent Price as Edgar, Arthur Honeycutt as the old man, and Carl Malden as Officer No Name. Performed by the Clockwork Cardiac Theater, with sound effects provided by Professor Henry Fjord. We invite you to join us next week here at the Old Factory as Stinky Stories presents The Beans of Wrath by John Steinbeck, Little Outhouse on the Prairie by Laura Ingalls Wilder, and The Fart of Darkness by Joseph Conrad. Brought to you by Edible Words Advertising. Words so delicious, you'll forget all about the product. Stinky Stories. Sounds you can see. Stories you can smell. This has been a presentation of the Framundia Broadcasting System. Copyright 2010. All rights reserved.
This just in. Wooden pants in demand. The year is 1896, and the newest craze in fashion is here. Whether it's birch breeches, cherry chinos, cedar slacks, or teak trousers, wood is the word on everyone's lips and hips. This miracle fabric never shrinks, wrinkles, creases, or requires pressing. Soon, hangers will be a thing of the past. And best of all, these pants are guaranteed to never fall down. Yes, today's trees are tomorrow's trunks. Come try on a pair today, before they're all gone. Wooden pants, for the person who doesn't wear pants. Thank you.
on a carousel. This beat's too much to stop. One second I'm thinking I'm feeling the loss, and then I feel alive. Ooh, that man is like a flame.
Meanwhile, back aboard the great airship of Dr. R.D. Gearhart, Edison Spaeth finds himself seated across from the vast and looming presence of the man himself. But hiding within this waking dream is a looming nightmare.
Ah, here's Mr. Bojangles with our after-dinner coffee. Mr. Bojangles, personal space.
How can you sleep with those two on board?
I assure you, Bojangles and Cedric are harmless.
Harmless? Your baby tried to bite me.
That means he likes you. Don't be troubled, my boy. I've given them strict instructions that we are not to be bothered during our discussion. You may relax. Here, allow me to fill your glass. It'll settle your nerves.
Thanks. Gearhart. That's an interesting name. Is it German?
Gearhart is an intentional conundrum. Is it literal or figurative? Is my heart literally a machine, or does mechanization simply rule my fancy? Such mysteries keep one guessing, and it is the fascination with such guesses that allows the Radioptrix to stay aloft and for me to continue to exist in the consciousness of others. But ultimately, a name is of little concern. Only the meaning with which one invests it matters. Now, tell me, what do you think of the Radioptrix?
Well, I think it's a remarkable vessel. Only, why a Zeppelin?
Airship, if you please. It suits my idiom. A man's residence is an extension of his personality, and indicative of his character. This dirigible depository is a suitable place to house all of this atrocious, forgotten cinematic minutia. Someone, after all, must remember these things that will otherwise be completely forgotten, swallowed up by time.
Every shelf in here is loaded with tapes, discs, and film canisters. What do you do with all of them?
I analyze, berate, and praise them for the benefit of others who haven't the time or the interest to devote to such celluloid catastrophes. In fact, that was the germ of the idea that became the Clockwork Cardiac Theater.
Your show, yes. Better living through bad movies. Tell me, what exactly are you a doctor of? Psychiatry? The arts?
To analyze a film is not unlike psychiatry. Peeling back layer after layer of meaning and gradually uncovering truth about something or someone. Each mind is an oculus to another world. You step into another person's nightmares or dreams, someone else's visions. And that's what these films are. Little glimpses into other minds, little doorways that allow one to step into other times and realities. Each has a prepackaged bundle of memories of experiences one has never had, but which will be remembered in future as if they were our own. Each an intentionally provoked confabulation. My conversations with Orson have convinced me that radio is no different.
Orson Welles? You know Orson Welles?
Yes, indeed. I just had dinner with the man. Either he has become my arch nemesis or my best friend. I can't tell which.
Welles was one of the shining luminaries of radio, and one of the reasons I became interested in it to start with. The idea that one can produce things in that medium that cannot otherwise be produced. It's a sort of magic. One can conjure things into existence. For example, this German robot.
Ich habe den Captain retten können. Bitte. Aber berücksichtigen Sie, dass sie unter schweren Beruhigungsmitteln steht.
Or the helicopter and Kaiju just outside the window. Or a parlor in Victorian New England.
It was an evening like any other. I had asked my closest comrades to come to my house for dinner. Afterward, we would sit around our makeshift gentlemen's club with our pretzel sticks and our root beers and discuss things of weight and import. But this night was to be different than most. For this particular evening, I had something rather exciting to share. An invention that would forever change the world.
Yes. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening, Henry.
Another chocolate cigar, Lewis.
Well, I shouldn't, but they are delicious.
Gentlemen, so good of you to come. Now that we have supped, I invite you to refresh yourselves while I share with you my incredible news.
And so it begins.
No, this time I am certain. My friends, what if the impossible were possible? What if far were near? What if sweet were sour? What if women...
No, I know.
What if women could be understood?
Just what are you saying, Maurice?
Just this. My friends, I have done the impossible. I have invented a portal to another world.
Surely you can't be serious, old fellow.
On the contrary, I have never been more serious about anything in my life.
You were pretty serious that time you thought you could hatch a rabbit from an egg.
And the time you thought you were pregnant.
No, this is entirely different. This time I am sure of what I say. Emil, haven't you ever wondered what's beyond these four walls?
There's nothing outside of these four walls.
But what if there was?
But how could one know that, Maurice?
I am very glad you asked. Gentlemen, please observe. I have invented a device called the door. With this device, I will step into another place and another time.
You're mad, old boy.
Gentlemen, I will see you in the future.
Farewell!
Where am I?
Good heavens, Maurice. Where did you go?
What year is it?
It's still 1896. You only stepped into the closet 10 seconds ago, Maurice.
The future! So different than I imagined.
What's that in your hand, old sport?
Why, it's proof. Proof of another dimension. Look you, a fluffy towel.
Where on earth did you find a towel?
Apparently this door leads to a closet. Bit of a letdown, I'm afraid.
Well, so much for that.
Have something to top it, do you?
Indeed, my most excellent Broheims. I've invented a device called the Chick Sandwich.
By Jove, how does it work, old trout?
I am so happy you asked. It's quite simple, really. It's a regular sandwich with the peanut butter and jelly on the outside. It's a most amusing deception.
I say, old bean, looks like the joke's on you. Now you've got filling all over your fingers.
My friends, please observe. I've invented a mirror that reveals the truth about any person who dares to look into it.
However, does it work, old spoon?
Well, you simply look into the mirror and... Why did someone tell me I looked like that?
Well, I've invented a device called the retraction.
The retraction? What does it do?
Nothing. I take that back.
Gentlemen, I've invented a device called the girl.
Sounds suspect. What exactly does it do?
I'm not sure, but so far it just makes me feel apprehensive and uncertain.
Sounds like the effect of my latest invention, the pointy blanket and the moist pillow.
I think I'd rather prefer the girl.
Gentlemen, I've invented a device called the backward shoe.
However, does it work, old fruit?
It doesn't.
Well, keep trying, old snack. My latest invention is called the trick knee.
Really? What tricks can it do?
It can bend.
Well done, old tot. Please notice my latest invention, wooden pants.
Intriguing. What are the benefits?
Well, they'll never wrinkle, never shrink. They can stand up by themselves, so you won't need to buy any hangers.
Are there drawbacks?
Well, as such, you really can't wear them.
Ha! Back to the drawing board, old snout. Meanwhile, I've invented a device called the flying egg.
I say, how does it...
I say, my wall!
Quick reflexes for an older fellow.
Years of dodging responsibility will keep you limber in you.
Well done, old chimp. Please direct your attention to my latest invention, the nose organ and the dancing hanky.
Great elephants! However, do they work, old nut?
I simply insert the nose organ,
and as the organ plays, the hanky dances.
What a jovial hanky!
Well, it was.
What do you mean, old chap?
Well, the hanky now has moist and terrible secret.
Behold, my latest invention, inflatable toast.
Gentlemen, look you, the edible hat.
See, the self-wetting sheet.
Behold, the self-petting cat.
Observe, the self-laying egg.
That's it, gentlemen, blue sky thinking. Emil, what have you got?
Gentlemen, I've developed a device called...
Yes?
Called?
Yes?
Cold?
Yes?
The end.
Well, while these vaguely British, tragically ingenious fellows were shaping the future of, humanity in 19th century England, somewhere far to the west and a continent away, trouble was brewing.
Stillwater, Oklahoma, 1893.
String them up, boys. Make sure that rope's nice and tight, Charlie.
So it happened. I was trying to help her.
Shut your mouth, mister. I heard just about enough out of you. You ain't gonna slither your way out of this one. You're gonna pay for what you did to Mary Louise. What the Sam Hill? Who are you?
I rode out to watch a hanging. But it's a woman's prerogative to change her mind. I'm much obliged to you boys for catching this man, but I'll be taking him now.
Hear that, boys? She's gonna take him. Now listen here, Missy. You best skin out unless you want us to break you in after. This ain't no business of yours.
He's my bounty, so I reckon he is my business. This man's got a price on his head, and I aim to collect. Now you can walk away. Go on home, play cards, drink, whatever it is you boys do. Or the alternative, which I assure you ain't half as pleasant. Always gotta be the hard way, don't it? I swear, ain't none of you got any sense.
You saved me.
From them, maybe, but not from the law.
I suppose I'm in your debt, ma'am.
I reckon you are. So why don't you just come with me to Tulsa so I can collect all?
Never seen a woman handle a sidearm like that before.
Just like a man to assume a woman can't do anything. A woman can save a man as easily as a man can save a woman, mister.
You got a name, miss?
My name ain't none of your business, sir, lessen you talking about my professional name. But I reckon you figured Carnahan was a man, just like everybody else.
Yes, ma'am, I suppose I did.
Shows what you know. It's not my name on the wanted posters, but yours. So I figure your name is the only one that matters right now.
I do apologize, it's just I've never seen a woman act in such a capacity before.
There's a lot you don't know about women. What's that mean anyway, woman? Nature aside, it's just a word, a category to put people into. Assume they can't make a difference. My daddy taught me otherwise. Taught me there weren't nothing a woman couldn't do a man could. Right now, I'm about to take a wanted man into justice. Bring a little balance into a world ain't got enough.
I'm in a precarious position at the moment. This noose around my neck and, of course, acting nervous. I sure would appreciate some help, miss.
Would you stop calling me that? I swear. I was gonna do that anyways. How am I gonna take you with me if you tied to a tree? Hold still. There.
Thank you kindly.
You city fellas talk too much. This'd all be a lot easier if you just shut your mouth, sir.
I didn't do what they say I did.
Don't make no never mind to me you did it or not. I ain't a judge. All that matters to me is your face on that poster. The rest ain't my concern. The law says you're guilty, mister.
I haven't even been tried. I guess that's how things work out here, right? Guilty until proven innocent? I guess you know all about guilt, don't you? Lifestyle you lead.
Don't you try to talk down to me, lawbreaker. You don't know me. True, I done some things I ain't proud of, but I done a lot more I am. I made a name for myself collecting on the likes of you. A few more jobs and maybe I'll have enough to buy myself some freedom. Get a piece of land for myself, maybe a ranch. Live a different kind of life. Leave this one behind for good. Yes, sir, I plan to benefit off your misfortune. But you brought that on yourself, mister. Striking out at those ain't got nobody to fight for them.
She had nobody to fight for her. That's why I stepped in. Same as you did just now. Wasn't right what happened to her. All I want is justice for my wife.
Don't talk to me about justice. There ain't no justice for women out here, unless we go out and get it. It's a man's world, ain't you heard? Making my way in it ain't been easy. My skin's a mite thicker than it used to be. But I live on the right side of the law, and I got more guts in my little finger than you got in your whole body, mister. Murdering your wife. You ought to be ashamed of yourself.
Well, I guess you don't know me either, miss. I love my wife. And the law? The law's a joke. Don't you know how the law works? Justice ain't blind. You get on the wrong side of power, and they'll make you guilty of anything they want you to be guilty of. People like you bring others in, take the money. You don't care if I'm guilty or not. You don't care about justice. You don't care about right or wrong. The only thing you care about is a bounty.
You done? Right and wrong ain't hard to figure out, mister. The law says you done wrong. That's all I know. So for now, you are what I say you are. Now my colt don't care nothing about right or wrong. She just does what I tell her. You try to run? She'll chase you down, bite your heart in the leg, make this trip a whole lot harder. So lessen you want me to drag you 60 miles to Tulsa.
Innocent men don't run.
Apparently they don't shut up neither. So let's get a move on. It's a 3-day ride to Tulsa, mister. You best get comfy.
A saddle would sure help, miss.
I bet it would. And stop calling me that. Come on, girl.
Thank you.
Won't you come to your senses? Come down from your fences. Open the gate. It may be raining, but there's a rainbow above you. You better let somebody love you before it's too late.
What's the matter, Timmy?
We're studying the president's high school. It's so boring.
Not anymore.
Complaining about a problem without proposing a solution is called whining.
Wow, Theodore Roosevelt!
That's right, it's the cowboy of the Dakotas himself.
Theodore Roosevelt.
I am as fit as a bull moose.
Trustbuster, conservationist, rough rider, and Ironwood leader of unimpeachable honesty, and now you can have your very own. Comes with posthumous Medal of Honor, portable pigskin library, pocket veto, and removable clothing for those midwinter skinny dips in the Potomac.
Foreign dignitaries hold separately.
Call him TD, call him Colonel, just don't call him Teddy.
Spitz of May and Kenny of King's Kick.
Lead your Rough Riders up Kettle Hill, establish the National Park Service, build the West Wing of the White House and the Panama Canal, develop an intense dislike for Woodrow Wilson, and pass the Hepburn Act of 1906 and give the ICC the power to replace existing rates with just and reasonable maximum rates.
Theodore Roosevelt.
Order in the next 10 minutes and you'll get Charles W. Fairbanks absolutely free.
San Juan Hill Place and Daughter Alice sold separately.
Collect all 44 U.S. presidents today.
The presidents are cool!
Now, if we can only get him to eat his vegetables.
Commanders in Chief, by Play Schools.